The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
This is Kevin Wallace for NBC 5 News, your place.
It's 14 after 7, 770-5633. Happy to take your calls. Open phones here for a little bit on Find Your Phone Friday. Wild Salmon, you were digging the conversation with Rick Manning, all that. Digging in and out of the Matt Gaetz issues and everything else. What are you thinking, huh?
Well, I've been watching and listening, and I'm old. I'm not going to be around a long time, so this is your world and everybody else who's listening. But
well, I'm not that much younger than you, buddy. I'm in my 60s, so.
Yeah, but 30 years is a long time.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Fair enough.
Yeah. Okay. So, a couple of points. How much effect do you think that Turning Point USA had on the election?
I would say Charlie's group had a pretty good. I would say very good, especially on turnout. I think he did a good job. Yep. Don't you?
Okay. Charlie Kirk is saying that if people oppose Matt Gaetz, they're going to go back and look at the senators who voted for Merrick Garland. And if they voted for Merrick Garland and won't vote for Matt Gaetz, they're going to primary him.
That is a very good thing. I read that headline, too. And that makes a lot of sense, because if you were willing to vote for that little toad that did more to probably shred constitutional rights over the last few years, you know, and as much as I dislike Mitch McConnell, in many ways, with his deal making, he kept that toad off the Supreme Court. Thank goodness, you know. Remember that back in the day. And if senators would give him a pass and give Merrick Garland that little toad a pass, and then they turn their nose up at Matt Gaetz, yeah, we got problems. Okay.
So there is some hope there. The other point that you guys were talking about was the stock market, and It's kind of hard to explain to people, but most everybody's 401k money now is in exchange-traded funds. If you're in the SPX, the S&P 500 fund, 4% of your money is invested in China.
That could be hitting that.
Well,
the next 4 years could be hitting that S&P fund, right?
Well, yeah, if there were some changes in the S&P fund and took China out of it, if they made the Chinese companies follow the same rules as U.S. companies, they couldn't be in the S&P 500. So, you know, I'm just pointing things out. Maybe there is some hope. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of turmoil. I'm sure that the swamp is going to fight back as tooth and nail as much as they possibly can, and they've proven that they are just completely evil. But there are some rays of sunshine out there, and I don't particularly like Matt Gaetz. I don't particularly like Donald Trump, but it's a comparison of what's the worst and what's the, you know, what has the potential of doing a better job.
And I don't necessarily like Matt Gaetz either. You know, for the reasons that we've talked about here before. But at the same time, can he be useful and wrecking ball what needs to be wrecking balled? And I would say yes, I think he can.
Well,
okay?
They went after him. They made allegations against him that were unproven. They didn't file any charges against him.
No, but and he has an amazing and say what you will about Matt. I'm not going to, you know, get into if you think he's a perfectly moral guy or something. Okay, so there's sexual impropriety. Probably about 90% of Congress is involved in that with some way. I think it's a job requirement right now, so the deep state has something on you if they ever need to take you out. But he has an amazing ability to take abuse and keep going. I mean, I would have resigned, you know, 2 years ago, given what's been going after him. Okay,
so we all have different constitutions, whatever you want to call it, and he's just somebody who seems to enjoy that. I don't know if he enjoys the right word, but at least sustain himself.
He relishes
the
attack. He's kind of one of those. Okay, bring it on. All right, I'm ready.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that's
anyway.
What's needed. All right. Thank you for the call, Steve. 770-5633. This is the Bill Myers Show.
Stay updated on
Measure right now. Go to blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply. The Bill Myers Show is on. News Talk 106.3 KMED.
722, taking your calls at 770-5633. By the way, I'm going to take one day off Monday, kind of sleep in one Monday morning, and then I'll be back on Tuesday. So Hugh Hewitt will be swamping away between 6 to 9 from the D.C. Capitol. He'll just keep you informed on that, and then I'll be back on Tuesday, okay? Just one day. Just one day, that's all. Lucy has been very patiently holding on. Lucy, how are you doing this morning? Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Always a pleasure. So you were listening to Lars yesterday, and I listened to him quite a bit, but I'm kind of in and out doing other work here, too. What did you hear that turned you on or got you angry? I don't know.
Yeah, kind of frustrating. So more and more, like, there are so many things going on in the world today with weaponization of our government and severe government overreach. And this is another thing that is currently happening in Washington, and there's talk of it happening in Oregon, where they'll have this snitch line, if you will, where people can call in and tell the government how, you know, my neighbor who is, you know, walks around with a MAGA hat on, I heard him over the fence talking about how they want to, you know, deport all these illegal aliens in the country, and oh, by the way, they like to go on Tuesdays and go to the gun range and so on and so forth. And so there would be this line where people can call anonymously to report things that they feel like is hate crime or...
Well, you know, as far as I'm concerned, there is no such thing as a hate crime. There are, you know, of course, the government hate crime. They are government created thought crimes. Essentially, it's a thinking crime. And, you know, if you damage someone and you hurt someone, I mean, actually hurt someone and commit crimes against them, you've done crime. All right. But this is very, very big from the left on punishing thought. OK, the wrong thing, that sort of thing. And so this is Washington. And I did hear a little bit of that situation there. And do we have that in Oregon yet? I know that we have this social engineering or social media engineering that's going on through the Secretary of State's office, but do we have the snitch line here yet, or are you just kind of like warning us to stay on the lookout for it?
We don't have it yet, but what they were talking about on Lars, it was somebody from a city official from Washington that was saying Washington is in talks with Oregon about how this would look and how this could help our state. And it's one of those things. We should all have our hackles raised because we actually need less of those kind of things. This is what has brought the country to where we are right now.
Mm-hmm.
This is why Donald Trump won the election. This is one of the reasons these severe government overreaches and all of these weaponizations of our government. Like, the government works for us, not the other way around. They don't get to treat us like we're... I'll use the word trash because that seemed to be the big one this year.
Yeah, agreed. That is something that we'll have to keep an eye on. And if anybody sees or hears of anything like that, even attempting to get going in Oregon, please let us know. And I know that you'll be watching for that, too, no doubt, especially after hearing
Absolutely.
Lars talk about that. Lucy, it is so wonderful. Call in more often. It'd be great to hear from you. Okay.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
All right. You too now. 725 at KMED, 99.3 KBXG. Now then, the reason I would like you to call right now is because I wish to give you something, and that would be a Diner 62 Real American Quiz. It's a great question. Great question on some history from 1832 that we're going to be talking about. And it'll be a $20 gift certificate for you from Diner 62, just south of White City. Now, through the holidays, they have a couple of hot open-faced sandwich specials, and I really enjoyed it. They had a pot roast sandwich that they had with mashed potatoes and brown gravy, hot turkey sandwich, kind of like a little early bit of Thanksgiving with mashed potatoes, gravy, and cranberry sauce. And today is also Clam Chowder Friday, all right? And those juicy third-pound burgers, get it with the onion rings. I like sweet tatty fries, too, but I got to tell you, Diner 62 has wonderful onion rings along with everything else they do. 770-5633, 770-KMED. And if you haven't played this in the last 60 days, you could win this next. We'll have fun.
Johnson Builders is the leading authority of pole building construction in Southern Oregon.
Title 250 dealer.vc with the details.
The Bill Myers Show is on. News Talk 106.3 KMED.
Diner 62 Real American Quiz. Let's have fun with this. And today it's about 1832, November 14th, 1832, yesterday in history. And let me see, we got, Mary. Hello, Mary. How are you doing this morning?
I'm good. How are you?
All right. I'm doing well, Mary. We're talking about yesterday in history. Back in 1832, New York City had its first mass transit debut, a horse-drawn streetcar. New York City's New York and Harlem Company premiered the nation's first. It was a horse-drawn, made its debut on Bowery and 4th Avenue in Manhattan between Prince and 14th Street. It was New York's first ever mass transit offering. Passengers were charged 12.5 cents for each ride, okay? How many passengers was the first streetcar in our country designed to carry? Was it 8, 12, 16, 20, or 24? How many passengers could get on that streetcar?
Gosh, 12.
Good day for you. It's not very often this happens.
You're a winner!
You know how seldomly the first person gets it? This time you did, Mary.
I know.
Great. Okay. Sorry for everybody else. I had Lauren and Janet and Kathy hoping to beat you out on this. But the streetcar, by the way, was named the John Mason after the president of Chemical Bank, a wealthy New York businessman, and he was a railroad co-founder. Essentially a horse-drawn bus, and it seated about a dozen. People were packed into the streetcars, kind of like sardines, and the seats being more than filled, the passengers are placed in rows down the middle, and they would hang on by the straps like smoked hams in the corner grocery, is the way the New York Times described it, okay? And when riders wanted to get off from the stagecoach, they pulled a leather strap attached to the driver's ankle. No bell. You would pull the, you'd pull a strap. Hey, quit. Maybe that's where the term pulling my leg came from. I don't know. But it's a serious deal here, Mary. Now, here's an additional little bonus deal. It wasn't until more than 50 years later in 1883 that New York's first steam-driven streetcar came on, and it got rid of the horse-drawn bus. And in 1909, the city introduced electric trolleys. Now, according to the baseball people, the Brooklyn Dodgers got their name and was shortened from Trolley Dodgers because fans of the baseball team had to dodge so much streetcar traffic back in the day. So they called them the Dodgers. So pretty cool stuff. So we're going to send you to Diner 62 and get yourself a Diner 62 burger on my behalf, okay? Hang on.
Thank you, and have a good day off Monday.
Oh, I plan on it. Plan on it. By the way, I will be off Monday, just Monday, just taking one day off, and I'll probably stare at my garage and say, you know, I need to clean this. I need to get this garage clean, and then I'll probably sit back down on the couch, and I'll tell you about that on Monday, okay, or Tuesday, rather. 7:32.
Ben Franklin once said, when the well is dry, we know the worth of water. A sputtering
The tips and video evidence. Bill London, KMED.
7:34. Markets are kind of down today from the looks of it. A lot of selling off, though, knowing exactly what's driving that. I noticed that price of oil going down there, too. They're worried. I guess there's a little bit of maybe recession, maybe a little bit of war worry going on in there right now. And gold I haven't checked. I really don't bother checking it all the time because when I buy gold, when I buy silver, it's about tucking away wealth that is not very exciting. You know, I'm not sitting here going, oh, my gosh, I got a 50% return on it today. And then it gets sold off for, you know, a 60% loss the next day. That's not what that's about. You know, if you want to trade stocks, great, nothing wrong with that. But when you need to have when you're looking at sketchy times, and no matter who's the president right now, like I say, even with President Trump going in, there are going to be strains on the dollar one way or the other. And currency destruction, instability, that's what having physical gold and silver is all about. So just in case, get in touch with Jay Austin and Company, gold and silver buyers. Maybe you're looking at the current valuations and saying, I'm selling out, baby, go ahead. They'll help you with that. Maybe you're looking to stack a little bit. I'm kind of one of those guys, a little bit of stacking at a time. It's kind of how I tend to play that. But you talk with your financial advisor. I don't have a financial advisor, but I just do it anyway. But they're one of my longest, greatest sponsors. Good people. 1632 Ashland Street in Ashland. 6th and G in downtown Grants Pass. And see how physical gold and silver might be able to protect some of what you have, just in case. All right? Jay Austin and Company, gold and silver buyers in Ashland, Grants Pass, FortuneReserve.com. That is FortuneReserve.com. Come on, button. I've been pushing the button. FortuneReserve.com. Well, at least I got to say it three times, okay?
Stephen Westfall Roofing, Inc.
CAMED.
Captain William E. Simpson, ethologist, and, of course, Wild Horse Fire Brigade dude. And, of course, he's been fighting to be nominated under the Bobby Kennedy website here and take care of the wild horses in the Burrow program. And I can't think of anybody who would be better for it. I think the person who was in number one, you were telling me, Captain Bill, was some dimwit from New Jersey who's never seen a wild horse, right? Isn't that
well,
the deal?
Well, actually, good morning. Yeah, the current director of the Wild Horse and Burrow program is a woman, a black woman from Hoboken, New York.
Lots of wild horses hanging out in Hoboken, I'm sure, that she grew up with and learned how to.
They're running down the street. So anyway, yeah, I don't think she's ever seen a horse except on maybe in the movies and whatever. But the BLM, you know, gave her a makeover. They bought her a cowboy hat and got, you know, she's it's just, that's why it's kind of a mess right now. And then you got, of course, Tracy Stone Manning, whose boyfriend or husband was the one who was indicted and served time, I guess, in prison for spiking a tree. Remember when they were having that protest and she was investigated by the FBI and her boyfriend went away and she gave a letter, said there was trees spiked. And I guess the Congressional Investigation Committee has called her in on the carpet about that, Josh Hawley. And then, of course, the head honcho of the whole totem pole there, so to speak, is head of the DOI, which is Deb Haaland, who, you know, claims indigenous wisdom, but then at the same time, she does things that are just the opposite of what indigenous wisdom would be. You know?
Is Deb one of those people that would say that we're going to just burn the forest to the ground under the guise of restoring it?
Well, that and everything else. You know, horses were part of the American indigenous culture. I mean, let's face it, America is a horse culture. You go back in any of our families, 100, 150 years, we all had horses. I mean, we are a horse culture. And
well, we even still call it now. Look what we do here, Captain Bill, horsepower. We still talk about horsepower.
Of course. We even have a car called the Mustang.
Yeah. You know, we're not talking about camel power, nothing like that. They might do that over in, Bedouin cultures, but no. We talk about...
Can you imagine a car called the Camel?
or else, you know, over in Saudi Arabia, my car has 73 CP. What's 73? What's that camel power? You know, camel power. We'll get that.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, man.
So anyway, it's an unfortunate situation because Deb Haaland, I believe, has convinced a lot of the tribes, the Confederate tribes up north, to dump their cultural heritage horses and instead start putting a lot of cows and sheep on the land. And the reason they're doing that, money is an unfortunate, it's a bad motivator in many ways.
Well, but there's more money than in the cows and sheep, right? Putting that on the land.
Yeah. Okay. You make twice as much per acre with each cow over a horse. And, you know, forget the fact that they're, you know, culturally important. They're, you know, I mean, a lot of the tribes, the Lakota consider wild horses a nation of their own, a nation of sentient beings. I mean, so they're revered, but that's because they realize the Native Americans realize their environmental benefits, and unfortunately, the only thing a lot of Americans realize is the benefits of money, and not, there's a lot of things in this life that are more important than money, and you know that, Bill, because I've seen you with your cat.
Well, I think your wild horses that you hang out with are way more impressive than my cat. But, you know, I love my cat, too. So overall, though, what's going to happen then with this Bobby Kennedy deal? Because the Bobby Kennedy website has shut down, right? It's closed nominations for right now. Where are you in this nominee to run the horse and burrow program?
Right. So the website's up. Mm-hmm. There's a right at the very top of it. It says, you know, nominations have been closed. And I came in number five position. The number one position was apparently somebody nominated Donald Trump Jr., but not for the job that I would accept.
Wanted to do only the wild horse and burrow program and manage that more effectively. What would you do? What would you do if you managed to pull this rabbit out of a hat or this horse out of a hat, I guess? Huh?
Well, yeah. In fact, I gave this little quick TED talk to the commissioners over in Elko, Nevada, who have, you know, Nevada has 2/3 of all American wild horses stuffed into one state.
So the wild horse program is really almost a Nevada program then, really? Okay.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there's 59,000, according to BLM, 59,000 wild horses left. 2/3 of those are jammed into Nevada, which is half the size of California. And probably most of those are in Elko County. So my plan is pretty simple. You know, first of all, there's not that many left. Okay, there's, according to the USDA, there's 95 million head of cattle in America. There's 1.5 million head of cattle on BLM public lands. There's 59,000 horses. I mean, if you do the math, you know, there's about 25, 26 horses on public land, or 25 or 26 cows on public land for every horse, and 2 million sheep. So when you think about that, okay, think about 25 cows lined up and one horse. Now, who do you think is doing a lot of the damage to the landscape? You know, I mean, and they're ruminants too. So, I mean, you know, I'm not saying livestock production.
Yeah, but I know you're not. I know you're not a no move guy.
Yeah, I'm not. So here's my plan. Here's my plan. It's really simple. You know, let's unjam Nevada first of all, okay? Because there's no reason why. I mean, California's out of lawnmowers. They have all the lawnmowers. I mean, that's just not right. We need to reach over to our neighbor's yard and say, hey, look, you got all the lawnmowers. We need some lawnmowers. You know, I mean, and California's not the only place. We're fire prone, and you know, an ecocultural burning and indigenous burning. You know,
you can't hire enough Lomakotze, nor is there enough money to hire enough Lomakotze to set everything on fire to what needs treated. And that's the part that doesn't really get talked much about in the grift world, the grants. Okay,
well,
that's the reality.
Yeah, it's not a scalable solution for wildfire prevention.
Might work in your watersheds around some of the communities and things like that, you know, relatively small-scale projects, but it's not going to be taking care of the hundreds of millions of acres. You got to have lots of things to do. A lot of things going after it. Okay?
Right. And think about this. For instance, the big Slater fire. Where did that start? It started right in the middle of indigenous country. Started right in the middle of where the Karuk tribe is. You know, I mean, I don't know if you knew this, but our friend, I'm trying to think of his name now, that ran, he's the ranger over there with where Corps Voices, the Calmeopsis is.
You talk about Merv George?
Merv George, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, Merv got kicked upstairs, apparently. You know, he's a little higher up now.
Well, yeah, of course, the Biden administration, you know, and the thing is there, you know, everybody is interested in cultural heritage, and that's why we should be interested in our horses. But Merv George's dad was killed by wildfire smoke. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, during one of the big fires, which a lot of these fires are beginning and coming out of indigenous run land. So, you know, I think that indigenous wisdom in many cases is overblown, and it's used to sell things. The color of indigenous culture is used to sell a lot of things because it listens good to people in the city. But the reality is indigenous fire is just as dangerous and get out of control as a U.S. Forest Service or Cal Fire controlled burn. And indigenous smoke is just as toxic to humans and wildlife as fire from anybody else's smoke from anybody else's fire. So, you know, the bottom line here is we need to be smarter. We need to stop falling for the sales slogans and the smoke in the mirrors, and, you know, do things right. So my plan is real simple. You know, we only have 59,000 horses left in the BLM's areas here, what they call the herd management areas. And we could relocate those out of the areas where they're in conflict with livestock grazing. There's no need. When people say there's overgrazing on a given piece of land, they're not telling you the whole truth, like a lot of things. It's a half truth. Yes, it's overgrazed, but it's because there's deer, elk, cows, sheep, goats, other animals, and horses, which are the minority grazers out there. So, but the combined grazing is too much for the land. So what do you do? If you're the land manager, you have to figure out how to reduce that overgrazing situation. And horses are a non-commercial herbivore.
Okay, but you see, that's just it, though, non-commercial, and isn't that part of the problem? Because as Herman, just recently, just dropped me a note here, he says, cattle and sheep pay the government for the grazing, horses do not. So how do you make that pencil?
But Herman, that's fine. You know, it's all about money. Herman likes his money. But here's the thing. Okay, what is it costing us for these fires? And we know for a fact there's enough published science to bury Herman with paper that says that if you reestablish your herbivory, catastrophic fire devolves.
Oh, I don't think he would disagree with wanting to reestablish the herbivory. But I'm just saying, though, that what drives the budgeting process in here is the money. And cattle and sheep make money. Wild horse is an expense on the people right now.
Right now. And that's why I want to fix this. So if you move the few horses that there are left as the initial first step, there's a lot more we've got to do, obviously, because we're missing 2 million deer in California. Like the deputy director of the Forest Service told me, he said, Bill, your plan's great, but guess what? You know, you got 2 million deer that are gone in California. It takes 500,000 horses to make up that grazing gap.
They're not going to do that. Horses won't make up the gap. Okay.
No, but what they are is they're a good first step, because we do have all in. There's 70,000 in holding that you and me and Herman, who likes his money, are paid.
Come on. It's not about likes his money. He's talking about the obvious. You know, he's a county commissioner, so he knows how to look at a balance sheet, okay? All right?
We all do. So the thing is prescribed fire is not the way to go, but there's 70,000 horses in holding right now that are all been sterilized. We pay for that. They get rounded up. We spend millions of dollars rounding them up.
And we're already paying for that, right? We're already paying that. At least.
Well, it's a lot of money. It's let's talk about balance sheet. You brought it up. Herman brought it up. Let's talk about the balance sheet. What's happening to put them into those corrals is $250 million a year.
Okay, so take that $250 million that you're using to corral them and then put them out on the landscape, put them to work then instead, right?
Right, yeah.
Okay.
And so when you do the math, each horse that gets relocated under the – and there's ways to do that. We have law existing right now that will do it. If we relocate them, each horse gives you $72,000 worth of value and fuel reduction over its life. So if you've got you can do the math. You know, you got 70,000.
72 grand. So you find out 72 grand. So that would be the equivalent of what, paying Loma Katsi to go out there and burn the landscape?
What I did is I did a complex meta search of what it costs to do all those guys, and what does it cost for mowing and prescribed burning per acre,
right?
And all the different methodologies, and took an average, and then looked at how much a horse does 5.5 tons. Per year, and they have an average 20-year lifespan. So when you do the math on how much fuel they remove off the
land. 20-year lifespan, so 100 tons of green goes down the gullet, right?
Yeah, grass and brush.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And disappears. And that's the other thing. People don't understand what they eat. I watch them up here. They eat poison oak. They eat a thistle, they eat oak leaves, oak branches.
Okay, all right. You have sold me on wild horses. If they eat poison oak, I have so much poison oak up at some of my transmitter sites on BLM land up at Nugget Butte and Gold Hill. That's when I got so sick a few years ago when I ended up trying to. Oh, man. Bring them up there. I want you to bring some horses, wild horses up there, and have them chew that all down. Can we make that happen?
I was driving down the road the other day from the ranch, and there was two little young guys that were just chowing down this big oak and poison oak bush. It was pretty amazing. But, no, they're very effective at that. And the nice thing about it is, you know, they don't sue you. They don't need PERS. They don't need any kind of retirement, medical, dental.
Yeah, and they're not going for the grift like all the professional arsonists are.
Right.
Okay, all right, all right. Well, you see, you've sold me on this. I mean, it's just a matter of how would it be monitored, though? Because there always has to be some monitoring of it. You just can't turn the horses loose
right.
And say, okay, I've done my job.
Right. No, we're not going to just turn them loose. As you know, we have our organization signed a 5-year contract with Cal State. We teach wild horse ecology now to qualified students from the university. And we just had a UC Davis grant student up here, frankly. a PhD. She's working on her PhD. So what we would do, and it's, you know, we don't need to do that with our herd here, but with herds that we would put in different areas, we would put RFID chips in them, which are very small. They don't get hung up. It's not like the old-fashioned collars for tracking. We'd put a chip, and then we would use drone overflights to maintain
and monitor where they're going. Okay.
Exactly.
All right. I get that. I mean, I don't want to go into all the granulation of that right now, but
But
you're not talking about just turning them loose and hope for the best. Okay. I could see some people getting upset about that. All right. Captain William E. Simpson with me. Let me go to a caller here for you, Bill. Hi, who's this? You want to talk with Bill? You're on. Who's this?
Robert Freeman.
Yeah, Robert, you got a question for Bill or a comment?
Well,
go ahead.
The problem is, you know, he's got this huge love for horses, and I ride horses. I don't care about that.
Yeah.
But so if you're going to save $72,000 with a horse, well, you're going to save $72,000 plus $3.18 per AUM on a cow. Now, we want to save money, right? Well, horses cost us money. And I can take you to the Steens where there's 1 million acres and there's 100, 200 horses in one spot. They don't spread out. They stay in that area, and they decimate it. You can go out in a pasture, and a pasture full of horses tears up the pasture way worse than a cow.
What would you say to that, Bill?
Well, I think his anecdotal data is incomplete. I've been studying horses my whole life. I grew up on a ranch with domestic horses in the Applegate. I've been studying. We own a herd of 200 horses up here now, the county.
Do you know if there's any is there any evidence, though, that maybe in some places they aren't spreading out like what had been talked about before, like what the gentleman here said?
Where I am right now studying the horses up here on the monument, and I used to log the monument in the late 60s, the bottom line is they move all around. Horses do not stay in one place. They're not riparian animals like cattle are.
Is there a possibility that there's something at the Steens that's keeping them in one place? And by the way, caller, thanks for bringing it up, okay?
No, the thing is the horses rotate around. They naturally rotate. The cows are an invasive species. They were brought over from Africa. They're a riparian animal.
Yeah, but the cows, we eat them, okay? So
That's an economic perspective versus biological.
Hey, maybe we could start eating if we start eating the wild horses, people will preserve them then. I'm just half kidding you, but you know, we'll go the French way, okay?
Yeah. Well, let's keep this factual, okay?
Uh-huh.
Let's talk the guy, what he brought up was he's talking about behavioral ecology, okay? And he's not a behavioral ecologist because he wouldn't be saying what he's saying because he doesn't know what he's talking about. The bottom line is this, okay? Cows came from Africa, period. Okay, they didn't co-evolve in the landscape.
But I don't care. Nobody cares about that, though, Bill. No, I mean, I have no problem with the horse thing, but nobody cares that the cow came from Africa. It's here now. Okay,
Bill. If you let me get a word in it.
No, that's a serious thing. I mean, I give you a lot of time here, and I'm happy to. But you know, to bring up cows and say it's an invasive species, the hell it is now at this point. That's all I'm getting at.
Right.
These days, it's not.
But.
All right.
But, Bill, to manage something properly, you have to understand its behavioral ecology.
Okay.
You're kind of like conflating economics and desire for a certain product with how you manage it. I mean, the bottom line is you have to understand its behavioral ecology to manage it properly. The gentleman that called in doesn't understand, okay, we have millions of acres of vacant wildland. Okay, where you cannot put cows and sheep because it's too remote, there's too many predators. That's number one. So what do you do with that land? And it's already collapsed. The herbivore out there with deer and elk are collapsed because that's been mismanaged. Okay, so what do you do there? Okay, you're not going to put cows and sheep out there to be meat for the apex predators. Okay, I've raised more cows and sheep than he has. I can guarantee you that. In fact, H. Allen Day, that's Sandra Day O'Connor's brother, he was the first woman on the Supreme Court. He had the largest ranch in America, the Lazy Bee Ranch. He had 7,000 wild horses and about 50,000 head of cattle. And we did an interview on the radio the other day, and he agrees with my perspective and my plan.
Okay.
He understands. He's one of the largest ranchers that ever was. H. Allen Day, looking him up. He's got books and all kinds of. But anyway, the thing is this. Okay, we have vacant wild land where you can't do livestock production, and doing these other methodologies that we just talked about for reducing the fuel are too expensive, and they're dangerous. Wildfires, when you light a wildfire, called a prescribed burn, it gets out of control. Plus, you're making more smoke, and like UCLA said, over their 10-year study, they saw 5,000 people a year die prematurely from wildfire smoke, 55,000 people in 10 years dead, at a cost of $400 billion in economic loss. $400 billion, okay, in California alone. So the thing is this. This is a no-brainer if they're put in the right locations. And understanding the right location, Bill, has a lot to do with understanding the behavioral ecology of a ruminant cow and a non-ruminant horse.
Now then, let's say if you were running the wild horse and fire the wild horse and the burro program, okay? If you were right. running that, then could you then look at what the gentleman was talking about a few minutes ago, in which from his point of view, there was damage going on.
Yeah, that's what I just said.
Okay,
that's what I just said. See, on BLM lands, what's happened is they've got a lot of the horses jammed up in the grazing areas incorrectly because they don't have a better idea. Okay, we have a better idea.
That's what I was getting at. Okay.
And what he doesn't realize, okay, is that Elko County commissioners, who have more horses than anybody, voted unanimously to support Wild Horse Fire Brigade. I have a letter from the county. I have a letter from White Pine County, Nevada, supporting Wild Horse Fire Brigade.
Okay, so you got buy-in. You got buy-in from some of these heavy wild horse counties then. Okay, they get it.
These are fourth-generation ranchers. They're not just counties. They're fourth-generation ranchers in Nevada and who've been dealing with horses for the last 100 years. And then we have a letter from the Nevada Lands Council, also all ranchers. So the thing is they understand my plan. They understand how it works. They understand cows and horses and the differences. And they understand that this plan is humane. It makes American taxpayers money. It's not a drain. It actually is the money maker. And then it also frees up more grazing for them because once those horses are moved into an appropriate wildland area where they can be happy and free again, just like President Nixon wanted. And, you know, when you look at the preamble, they need to be a wild and free and an integral part of the wildlands in America. And that's what the preamble of the act says. What we do is we free up a whole bunch of grazing for those ranchers who are trying to make a living and trying to produce products so that they end up with about 15% more grazing. So the thing is, the opportunity here is really big. And it's, you know, you can't take pot shots at something without understanding the whole picture.
Okay. Hey, Bill, I appreciate that's all I wanted to ask, though, because, you know, because people are going to be looking at the cost versus benefit. And all I'm just saying is that, you know, to go out there and talk about horses being natural and cows being invasive, you know, after a few hundred years, it doesn't matter. You know, I mean, that's all I'm getting at. Okay.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Economically, the plan is a winner because you end up with $250 million in savings from, you know, right off the bat, and then you get the value of their fuel reduction. And then on top of all of that, you look at the wildfire losses in California. For instance, 2018, Courthouse News reported $180 billion with a B dollars losses. There was about $50 billion that was insured loss. Now, like Court Boyce said, you know, District 1 Oregon representative there, like Court Boyce says, if it makes a small dent, if the Wild Horse Fire Brigade, let's say it made a 5% dent in $180 billion. You're talking, in addition to all the other money we've saved and the increased grazing that we've created for the livestock industry, we're talking about hundreds of millions in savings because of the reduced losses in wildfire.
All right. Very good. Well, I hope that you get it. I really would, because, I mean, at least it would be certainly a change from the status quo of charging taxpayers for it and just keeping people corralled or not necessarily putting them where they might be able to be of better use. Okay. Hey, Bill, I gotta go. All right. But thanks for coming on as always. And keep us informed if maybe your nomination goes someplace here. Okay. Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Bill.
All right. Captain William E. Simpson, Wild Horse Fire Brigade. Couple minutes after 8, KMED, KMED HD1, Eagle Point, Medford, KBXG, Grants Pass. 261-5444, very important number for you this morning, because even though, yes, we'll have a new administration coming in, maybe a reduction in inflation, one can always hope, that's going to be a big hope, but boy, if you buy insurance, you know that when they talk about, inflation's only been like 2% a year. Yeah, until you get your services, such as, I don't know, home insurance, car insurance, life insurance, insurance, you know, whatever. Talk to Steve Yancey at Sky Park and have him help you out. Call 261-5444, 261-5444. And if you are on Medicaid and you have questions about the Medicaid insurance, Medicare rather, not Medicaid. Medicaid's the state program. I misspoke, okay? Medicare. Medicare Advantage programs and the various supplementals. Talk with Lynn Barton, who has gone to work at Sky Park. She's a part of the big family there. Good people. Call her at 499-0958. 499-0958. She'll talk to you this morning and help you out. One way or the other. I said one way or the other. Let me push this button. This is the deal with Sky Park.
At Sky Park, we make insurance easy.
If you don't plan on cooking tonight, plan on dining at Freddy's Diner. Friday and Saturday nights, Freddy's features their hickory smoked prime rib. Plus, there's everyday favorites like New York steak, smoked beef brisket, Carolina chicken, pressure fried chicken, hand-dipped beer battered salmon or cod, and more. The menu is designed to please everyone in the family. Easy takeout, too. And stick around on Friday nights for karaoke at 9 p.m. Freddy's is a great place to meet friends or make some. Freddy's Diner in Old Town. Eagle Point.
If you have an Alexa device, you can listen to great news and talk anytime by first asking Alexa to enable KMED. After enabling the skill, you can listen to the most popular talk personalities like Bill Maher and Lars Larson, plus local news and weather 24 hours a day by just asking Alexa to play KMED. Alexa streaming on KMED is made possible by Megan McPherson at Farmers Insurance, Father and Son Jewelry, Hardcastle's Trailers, Pacific Healthcare Training, BM Auto Works, and Wash Buggy Wrap Lab.
If you're looking for a fun, informative 2 hours on the weekend, Sunday afternoons at 2, check out RadioLawTalk.com. It's a roundtable of seasoned attorneys talking over the latest legal controversies and decisions and the news. Test your legal brain on is it a case or no case. Get the insider's take on situations, cases, and some legal celebrity gossip, too. RadioLawTalk.com, sponsored by Reed Law Firm. If you've been injured, don't be a victim twice. Visit ReedLawFirm.com and RadioLawTalk.com, Sundays at 2 on KMED.
News Talk 106.3, KMED. You're waking up with the Bill Maher Show.
Steve and Sunny Valley, you're angry. Come on, it's Friday. We're heading into the weekend here. You're supposed to relax a little bit. Dude.
Well, Captain Bill keeps on pissing down my neck and telling me it's raining.
Oh, it is, huh? How's that?
We have American bison on this continent, which are closer to cows than the historical equines ever were to horses. I mean, the fossil record shows that the horses on this continent were the size of house cats. That's not native. They went extinct, and then the horses we have now were all brought over from Europe.
Uh-huh.
And most of them are descendants from the horses bred in Saudi Arabia.
And I've heard that, too. But, you know, as I will say, if something's been here a few hundred years, it might as well be. It might as well be native at this point, okay?
I don't mind that. I just don't like him pissing out of my neck and telling me it's raining.
I appreciate that. All right. Okay. It's 5 minutes after 8. We'll let that one go for right now, okay? Let's catch up with Town Hall News. And I don't know if this guy is having anybody urinating down his neck or not, but Mark Hutto is in studio. We're going to talk with him.
What's that about? What are we talking about here?
Well, no, you didn't have headphones on, so you didn't hear what was going on.
No, I did not. Okay, no. Yeah, I'm in here, and it's all quiet. So.
Steve was using that line from, what was it, The Outlaw Josie Wales?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, which is, don't whiz down my neck and then tell me it's raining, Senator, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
All right, but he used it a little more scatological, that kind of thing. But anyway, Mark is in studio, and we're going to talk about... well, I guess it's kind of tied in with this this snitch culture here, too. But it has to do with county agents coming onto his property. And we're going to kind of go through this a little bit. And I think it should be interesting. Maybe other people have had this happen, too. And that'll be coming up after. We got Town Hall News. We got Kim Commando Digital Update and so much more coming up. For